kuvekazu mushorsam ktizenketu even aluliak samara nem ayan lot. In other words, if you are 12 years old or younger, you should be in school and not listening to this radio show.
You're not dumb enough to actually try it. Know your rights. These are your rights. Oh, know your rights. These are your
Welcome to the July 30th, 2012 edition of Mendenki Yoga. This is JD.
Interrupting all programs.
This is a radio clash on pirate satellite. Orbiting your living room, cashing in the Bill of Rights. Cuban army surplus or refusing of the lights. This is radio clash on pirate satellite.
In this edition of Mendenki Yoga, we're going to talk about Roma, the gypsies in Europe, and their current situation here in Hungary, as well as Spain, as well as who are these Roma, gypsies, Gitano, etc. Many names for them all over the world, not just Europe, actually. I think many of our listeners probably already know that originally the Roma had migrated from somewhere in northern India through Iran, through the Middle East, and gone down to what is today Israel-Palestine, as well as going through Turkey and up through the Balkans, here to Hungary, as well as to Spain and the rest of Europe. Now with the European Union having Schengen, a borderless region, people are free to wander as they wish, and this means new questions and new situations for the Roma. It's quite sad that the racism against these Europeans is very intense, sometimes violent. As you know, here in Hungary, these things happen. They often have a reputation for crime, etc. But also, I think these things are also exaggerated because of the racism. So it's a complex issue, but the racism is still there. And this is reflected in segregated schools, and especially in Central and Eastern Europe, but also in Western Europe, as we're going to find out in this show. So, first, there's an interview I did with these two anthropologists from Spain, from Madrid. Their names are Liria de la Cruz, who's the Gitano, Gitana, it's the Spanish word for Roma, for gypsy. And then there's Paloma Gay y Blasco, who's Spanish, but not Gitano, who actually lives in the UK. But they've been working together for 20 years as anthropologists on the issue of Roma in Spain. But more recently is an interesting issue where the South Madrid authorities built a new school for the school district there. Which everybody was for, but then what they found out is the school that was built was for the non-Roma and non-immigrants, and so the authorities appear to have used the building of a new school as a way of segregating the people that they don't want in the school. So in the old school ended up being the Roma and the immigrants. Now, what's also interesting is immigrants we mean by asylum seeker children and refugee children from Africa, from Middle East, etc. Not the children from France or Germany or Britain, for example. So, you know, there's a kind of a privilege here. For the European privilege. Anyways, so let's, and then later on we're going to talk to Valery Novoselsky, who's from Ukraine originally, but he lives in Israel, and he's the one who runs the Roma Virtual Network, which is a very important news source on the internet. And then also later we're going to talk to Balázs Touré, a Hungarian photographer who has been spending time for the, in the past years with the families of the men and women and children that were killed, murdered in Hungary in a serial murders against Roma, which we've discussed in this program before. Okay, so first, let's talk to Liria de la Cruz, who's the Gitano Roma Spanish woman, and Paloma Gay y Blasco, Spanish again, but not Gitano. And they're going to talk about the school system that was segregated in Madrid. And this interview was done in the basement of Central European University. And thank you very much, Julieta, which we heard in the last week's program, who made the translations possible. Oh, and one more thing before I forget. On August 2nd, this Thursday at 6 p.m. at Nehru Park, the banks of the Danube in the 9th district will be the international commemoration of the Roma Holocaust. This is an annual event, and I've covered this in past years as well. And I will be there to make some recordings as well. But it's open to the public. It's a very friendly event. Of course, it's a very sad and solemn event as well. But everyone is welcome. Okay, so on with the show here. Here's the interview with Liria de la Cruz and Paloma Gay y Blasco. Welcome, Liria and Paloma, to the Mindenki Yoga Radio Show. So tell me about yourselves and how you met and what you've been involved in. So, Paloma.
Do you want me to say? Okay, so I was doing my PhD in social anthropology for Cambridge University. And I wanted to work on issues of Gitano gender and all that stuff. So then I went to do field work, anthropological field work, spent a year and a half, 2 years living with a Gitano community in Madrid. And Liria happened to be one of the people that I met during my field work. And we became friends very quickly, quite good friends. But what happens usually is that anthropologists go to study, you know, middle class white people go to study the other. And they have access to the world, but it doesn't happen the other way around. But because we were both from Madrid, living in Madrid, basically Liria also wanted to know about my world. So she started coming to visit my house to go to university. We would hide from her family, pretend we were going to the hospital or to the doctor or whatever, and then we would go to my house and so on. So she also wanted to know about the non-Gitano world. We became friends, very close friends. But we stayed more or less in these roles of friends, but also anthropologist and informant for 20 years, 18 years. And then about 3 years ago, we decided we wanted to start writing together instead of me telling her story. We wanted to, you know, her to have her own voice and me myself to have my voice. So that's how it happened, yeah.
Bueno, como ya ha contado Paloma, nos conocimos cuando ella vino a hacer su trabajo de campo.
As Paloma has told you, we met when Paloma came to do her field work.
Nos hicimos muy buenas amigas.
We became very good friends.
Y así durante 20 años.
And like this for already 20 years.
Pero Paloma me dio la oportunidad cuando yo le había contado todo el problema sobre el colegio.
But Paloma gave me the opportunity when I told her about the problem with the school.
Y que la contara como una historia, pero personal, pero juntas y unidas.
To tell the story about this school, but not as only a story by myself, but both of us to tell the story about this school.
Me pareció una idea genial porque creo que todo el mundo debe conocer, el mundo entero debe conocer lo que ocurrió con nuestros hijos en el colegio de San Roque.
Because I think this was a big opportunity for everybody in the world to know what happened with our children in the school of San Roque.
Porque no me parecía bien que nuestro libro solo se basara en mi vida, sino también en la vida de mis hijos y la de todos los niños gitanos.
Because I thought it was good if the book was not only about my children, but the Gitano children and all the Gitano children in the world and the children.
Porque
in general,
pienso que todos los niños tienen, o sea, tienen que tener los mismos derechos, los mismos niveles educativos.
because I think all the children have the right to have the same education level.
Y el mismo trato humano.
And the same human treatment.
So what is the situation for Roma Gitano children in Spain and in Spain in general?
¿Cuál es la situación de los niños gitanos en España en específico?
Pues la mayoría tienen, como ya ha explicado Paloma, aunque aparentemente hacen como que nos quieren ayudar, nos quieren dar un nivel educativo, pero la realidad de la vida es que no es así.
As Paloma mentioned, they say they tried to help us. They say they tried to give the same education, but it's not like that.
Porque tienen unos programas educativos, pero son diferentes.
Because they have some educational programs, but these are different from the others.
En el fondo nunca nos dan las mismas oportunidades que a los demás.
Basically, they don't give us, the gitanos, the same opportunities as the others.
And what is this a deliberate segregation, or is this kind of cultural segregation? Is there a difference, maybe?
Es hecha a propósito. ¿Tú crees que es hecha a propósito?
Sí, porque si entran dos niños a un colegio de 3 años, los dos son de la misma edad, y a uno le estás enseñando una cosa desde el principio y a otro es otra, está claramente que nos están enseñando algo diferente, o sea, están segregando.
Yes, this marginalization is in purpose, because if you have 2-3 year olds and you teach them different things, obviously they will learn different things, and this is marginalization.
Y si yo no llego a ser presidenta del APA unos años antes, que yo había sido presidenta del APA del colegio de mi hija, yo no me hubiese enterado que mi hija tenía otros niveles educativos diferentes a los otros niños de los demás.
And if I had not been the president of the Parents Association of my daughter's school, I would never have realized that children got other curriculum, a different curricula from non-gitano children.
Porque nos tienen engañados a la mayoría de los gitanos, nos engañan y nos tienen una venda. Hacen como que mandan grupos de apoyo, pintan un colegio, te enseñan 4 cosas y nosotros creíamos que eso era la educación.
Because they had deceived us. They are cheating. They told us that they are going to educate us, but it's not true. They sent special teachers, but it's not to get the same level.
You? What do you think?
It's a complicated thing because, of course, sorry, from their point of view, I mean, if you think about the policies and so on, the policies always have this notion that the ultimate aim is to educate the gitanos. To educate the gitanos, to give them education, to give them the same opportunities as everybody else. And the notion is that they start off, payos and gitanos, Roma, non-Roma, do not start from the same position. So you have to compensate for the Roma who are behind. But at the same time as that happens, I think there is a very deep-seated sense which underlies policies and practices, which is that the gitanos are somehow abject, revolting. So that somehow people would not want their children to be educated with gitano children. You really wouldn't want gitano families living next to you. So the policymakers and the bureaucrats and the politicians and so on, all these programs and so on that they produce, somehow are always revolving around this notion that there is an implicit understanding that people who do not want their children educated with gitano children, who do not want gitanos living next to them, are being reasonable. That they themselves, the policymakers, wouldn't want gitanos living next to them either. Do you see what I mean?
So the Spanish non-gitano community, is there efforts from that community to keep gitano children out? Or is it so deliberate from that perspective?
There have been, you see, people do not say we don't, okay, there is, in the area where we're talking about, which is in the south of Madrid, there has been quite a vocal sort of movement complaining against the resettlement of gitanos who arrived in these areas from the rural areas are alongside the non-Roma in the 1950s and 60s, against the resettlement of these gitanos in those areas. So what you see is gitanos and non-gitanos arriving in the periphery of the city, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, very poor people who built shacks and rural urban migrants, gitanos and payos, yeah, alike. And what happens then is that these people live there for 20, 30, 40 years, and at the moment, the non-gitano people are saying, well, the gitanos should be sent somewhere else, because the gitanos are preventing us from developing socially. Yeah, we don't get, they are holding these areas back, because there is conflict, there is delinquency, there is drug dealing, there is all these things, you see. So the gitanos somehow are pulling us back. So instead of, why do we, just because I'm working class, why do I have to have the gitanos living next to me? Send them to the posh areas in the center and in the north of the city. That's what these people say. You see what I mean? So then when the schooling situation happened, this problem happened with the schooling in Lydia's area, what happened then is that the parents said, well, they didn't necessarily say, I don't want the gitanos living here, my children being educated with the others, but they say, it's not because they're gitanos, it's because their level is lower, it's because the authorities have said, so people sort of hide behind other things. But the thing is, I mean, Lydia hasn't told you about the situation with the school, because in a nutshell what happened was that there was one small school, there was one large school where nice remodeled, where the social workers in the area had channeled the gitano children, yeah, and the immigrants. And it was a school with 700 places and 240 children, only immigrants and gitanos. Yeah. And then there was alongside, 300 meters away, another smaller school which had not been remodeled, where the social workers had channeled basically the non-gitano children, yeah? So what happened then is that, of course, and the parents themselves were asking for the children to go to the non-gitano school. It became known as the gitano school. So that school became oversubscribed. So you had 400 plus children in a school designed for 300, yeah? And the parents started to campaign, the Payo parents, the non-Roma parents in that school, started to campaign to the authorities for better educational facilities for the children. And then what the local government says, we'll do a swap. We'll put the Payo children in the bigger school, nice new school, and the Gitano and the immigrants in the older school. The Gitanos then said, no, we have a bigger school, let's all be together, bring them here. Yeah, we don't want to move to an old bad school, bring them all here. And then is when they appealed to this notion, then is when they revealed, basically, to the parents that the Gitano and immigrant school had suspended the national curriculum and was instead a compensatory school, where rather, because the children were described as coming from very difficult backgrounds, from very problematic backgrounds, some of them didn't speak Spanish, others were from Gitano families, and so on. The teachers needed to work with, do a kind of holistic work, working with the families. They said the children don't have attention span, the children don't know how to use the school environment, all this kind of stuff. So there's no way we can put them together in the same school. And then is when the protest started, and the protest was lost. Eventually they had to swap. And there was a very violent encounter with the police and all that kind of stuff. So that's like the background.
Bueno, como ya ha explicado Paloma, está bien claro que lo que hicieron con nuestros hijos no era fue un acto de racismo completamente.
So as Paloma has explained, this was actually an act of racism, totally.
Porque en ningún momento nos neguemos a que nuestros hijos, además, de hecho, yo quería que mi hija se juntase con los demás niños, no solo que se críe y que crezca entre gitanos.
Because also I also wanted my daughter to grow among non-gitano people too, not only among gitanos. I was open to this.
Y que los todos juntos aprendan lo mismo y que les enseñen la misma educación.
And that all together learn the same things, that they receive all the same education.
Porque de esta forma han atrasado mucho la educación y en un futuro lo que hemos estado los padres luchando para que los niños se enseñen a compartir, a estar todos juntos, todo lo han echado hacia atrás.
Because in this way they have taken our child behind. in this way, not sharing, they have taught our children not to share, not to be able to share the same space.
Y de esta forma, o sea, han hecho que nuestra generación de nuestros hijos, la generación de ahora, se den cuenta, o sea, se den cuenta y crean que ellos no son igual, que no son iguales, sino que son inferiores a ellos.
And they have made our children believe that they are inferior to the others.
Y es la forma más clara que antes no veíamos y que ahora sin darse cuenta o dándose cuenta, es una forma de que sabemos que no somos, para ellos no somos iguales, somos diferentes.
And in this way they have established a judgment that we are inferior, that we are different.
So the Spanish Gitanos, they are citizens of Spain.
Son ciudadanos españoles, los gitanos.
Sí.
And they are well, and so how did you took this to court, and on what, how did you appeal this in court, and what grounds?
¿Cómo luchaste en la corte por este tipo de cosas?
Es que lleguemos a ir a la corte, o sea, lleguemos a, se enteró todo España, porque salimos en la televisión, salimos en la radio, hubo programas, enviamos cartas a todas las identidades para que. Y al principio, Lucía Fegar en el Pleno, que es una consejera, una diputada, ella dijo que nunca se podría hacer mientras los padres no estuviesen de acuerdo.
Actually, all the world get to know this because we were in radio, in television, and actually an education representative told to the parliament that she wouldn't let, or this was not going to happen. If the parents, if the Gitano parents didn't agree for this change, it was not going to happen.
Pero después, como todo era un tema también político, donde sí que había muchos millones por medio, porque de eso me di cuenta personalmente, porque en el albarán que había sobre los millones que iban a dar de un colegio a otro.
But because this was also related to a lot of money, millions of money that was that were involved in this issue. That I became to know this because this was written in a document.
Hicieron callar a todo el mundo. Hicieron callar a todo el mundo, y ya luego después todo el mundo nos dio la espalda.
Then, because of this, everybody shut up. Nobody wanted to say anything, and people gave us their backs.
Y de hecho, esos millones que nos daban, que yo me negué a coger porque yo lo que quería es que si iban a dar millones para pintar un colegio y darnos cuatro pupitres, ¿por qué no ponían, prefería que lo pusieran en profesores de apoyo para que mi hija y los demás tuvieran el mismo nivel educativo?
And the reason I refused to accept this money was because I thought that this money shouldn't be expended in refurbishing of the other school. I wanted this money to be invested in the education of my daughter and other children.
Pero todos juntos en el mismo colegio, sin tener que dejar el colegio bueno, grande y hermoso para ser un colegio viejo, roto y encima con otras diferencias educativas.
But I wanted that all the children studied together. I didn't want this money to leave the new school to go to the older school and make it nice. I didn't want that.
Porque ellos incluso nos prometieron que si cambiábamos de colegio, si accedíamos, iban a ponernos autocares, iban a ponernos profesores de apoyo.
Because they also promised that if we left the other school, the bigger school, they would give us also buses and they would give us other things.
Pero eso nunca se hizo. Hoy en día mi hija tiene que ir andando, el día que su padre no puede llevarla en coche o no podemos llevarla, mi hija tiene que ir a recorrer unos 300 kilómetros para llegar, 300 metros para llegar al colegio.
But this was never done, actually. They just promised. Actually now, when my daughter wants to go to the school by herself because her father cannot go to with her, she has to walk more than 300 meters by herself.
La cuestión es que nunca se hizo nada de lo que se prometió, ni al principio ni al final.
And they didn't realize anything. They didn't make anything happen of what they had promised.
Y incluso nos amenazaron, porque nosotros estuvimos durante 2-3 días sin llevar a nuestros hijos al colegio.
And they even threatened us, because for 2 or 3 days we didn't take our children to the new school.
Que si nosotros no nos íbamos al colegio al que ellos nos habían cambiado, nos quitarían incluso la custodia de nuestros hijos.
And they told us that if we didn't go to the school that they had given us, they would take away our children.
Por no llevarlos al colegio.
For not taking them to school.
Amazing, amazing. The Gitano community, how did they organize themselves in this project? I mean, I'm always interested in the activism for justice issues. I mean, how long did it work? How did you bring your community together?
Bueno, yo tenía una amiga que era ella paya.
I had a friend who was a non-gitano friend, who was a paya, as we called non-gitanos in Spain.
Que era de una asociación, no recuerdo cómo era de qué asociación.
She was from la FAPA, an association.
La FAPA de Ginés de los Ríos, de la federación, que se implicaba, incluso el jefe de la federación de los Ríos se implicó con nosotros.
It was the Federation of the Ríos. And he was involved in with our problem.
Y él me ayudó, me puso en contacto, porque yo dije, dime qué tengo que hacer, dónde tengo que ir, porque yo voy a luchar por la educación de mi hija. Esto no se va a quedar así.
I asked him where to go because I wanted to fight for the schooling of my child. I told him this cannot be left like this.
Entonces empecemos a enviar cartas a todas las identidades que había, a todas las asociaciones.
So then we started to send letters to all the organization and all the entities that could be involved with this problem.
Y Manuel contra la intolerancia y contra el racismo, que también es payo.
And Manuel, who fights against intolerance, and he's also a non-gitano.
En fin, y más asociaciones también de etnia gitanas.
And he also helped us, and also other organizations that are non-gitano or non-roma.
Y todos, o sea, me ayudaron a hacer esa lucha, me ayudaron a decirme cómo tenía que hacerlo, y fue de ahí que hicimos una manifestación en el barrio.
And all of them told me how to proceed, all of them told me what to do. That's why we organized a demonstration in the area.
Y sí que hubo un apoyo muy grande en los gitanos. Jamás se había visto tanto apoyo en gitanos luchando por la educación de nuestros hijos.
And never before had been seen all this movement of the gitanos for the schooling of their children.
Y estamos demostrando que es mentira que nosotros, o sea, porque si dicen que nuestros hijos no quieren estudiar, que los padres no se preocupan, que hay mucho ausentismo.
And we were showing that it was wrong, that it was a lie, that gitanos don't worry about the schooling of their children, that they don't worry about their children. This was a lie.
Demostremos que en aquel momento todo era mentira, porque había un grupo de padres, o sea, todo el colegio, la parte de los gitanos, se pusieron de acuerdo y me apoyaron y estuvimos luchando por ello.
We proved that they were wrong because the gitanos all came together and they supported me and we fought for this schooling.
Salvo los inmigrantes, que a los pobres les amenazaron que si se ponían en contacto con nosotros y nos apoyaban, los deportaban a su país.
Except the immigrants, because for their situation they were threatened that if they went to demonstrate with us, they would deport them.
Incluso el director de nuestro colegio nos llegó a decir que él tenía su boca tapada porque él no podía hablar, porque también le habían amenazado tanto a él como a los profesores, que si un solo profesor nos apoyaba, definitivamente los echaban.
Even the headmaster told us that he has to have his mouth shut because he had been threatened, as well as all the teachers of the school, that if they demonstrate or they supported the demonstration, they could be fired.
De hecho, Mariluz Amado, que eso si os metéis en internet, que es una persona que me apoyó mucho en todo lo que hicimos, después, cuando todo terminó, ella fue despedida de su trabajo.
In fact, Mariluz Amado, you can look it in the internet, she was someone who supported me very much, and she was fired after the protest.
Porque se puso en contra de toda la educación.
Because she was against this marginalized schooling.
Sobre todo del consejero de educación, que fue con el que tuvo más enfrentamientos, por ayudarnos en nuestra lucha, claro.
against the representative of the education ministry.
It's interesting. I think you hear from a lot of non-Roma Hungarians that the Roma don't want to be in school, and it's the same story. It's sad. It's so sad that it's similar.
Do you know about the was this challenged in the courts at all?
No. It never went to court. It never reached that far. It was always a political decision. So basically, it was all done through kind of the political system. So they appealed. They basically tried to use the Congress, the MPs, mm-hmm. to challenge, to sort of reverse the decision that had been made by the autonomous community of Madrid, by the local government mm-hmm. of Madrid, the education department of the local government. And it just, it never got any further.
But I know that Czech Republic, Slovak Republic, Hungary, there's various European Court of Justice decisions.
It didn't go that far. It never went that far. I think basically it just didn't develop. It didn't go that far. The parents basically felt they had lost the fight Lydia can tell you, but once they saw the effect that the situation was having on their children, they took the children to the school, to their old school on the first day, and the children were allowed to go into the school, but they were told they had to be in a separate classroom and they wouldn't be able to mix with the other children in the playground or eat with them. So, and the children were in a classroom surrounded by police, and they were frightened and very upset by this. So basically, at that point, I think the parents decided they couldn't do anything else. And then they took this appeal to Congress, and Congress turned it down. And then they took it. There is this institution in Spain called El Defensor del Pueblo, the Defender of the People, who basically looks into abuses done by the authorities, so done by the people in power. And he ruled, he did his own private investigation, and he ruled that there had been no misconduct here, and that basically nobody's rights had been violated, that it was simply an exchange of two buildings and there was nothing to be done about it. So that's as far as it went. And when they got this confirmation from the Defender of the People that the whole process had taken place appropriately, then they just gave up.
So I am rather ignorant about Spain, but Spain has autonomous areas, and it has more self-control in a local area than I think Hungary would, which has kind of a national system. So is the problem here kind of a local democracy is allowing this discrimination to happen? And
I think it's a problem of many levels, because on the one hand you see each autonomous area sort of has different institutions that deal with different aspects what they call the Gitano issue, the Gitano problem. So you have lots of different levels of intervention. So you have housing intervention, you have education intervention and all that, and they try to sort of affect the situation or the life of the Gitanos in different ways, you see. So you have there are national institutions which are national level, and there are local institutions, and then they try to work together in different ways. But the issue here is not just about, there's like an overlap between the institutions and institutional sort of attitudes and individual's attitudes as well. I don't think you can separate the two. I think deep down is this recognition that it's reasonable. All in all, there was a sense, of course there were many people who supported the Gitanos and so on, but at the same time there was a sense, what else can you do in order to get them to reach the same educational level? They have to be separated. They need more resources and so on. And that's what the Defender of the People ruled, that the Gitano children needed to be and the immigrant children needed to be separated from the others because they needed additional resources. So what he ruled was that it was for the benefit of the Gitanos that they were separated. You see, that was the final thing, that this was in order to benefit the Gitanos, because in this special school they had additional resources which they would lose if they were integrated with the others. And this is a model of education which is completely wrong. I don't know if you've heard, there has been a recent research project published by teachers in the United Kingdom working with Romanian Roma children who had been going to special schools in Romania. and who once they migrated to the United Kingdom went straight into mainstream schooling, because in the United Kingdom this doesn't exist, and the Roma children did perfectly okay. And the teachers basically have said, well, you know, they have highlighted that this is an issue of racism, that there is no educational rationale for the separation of the Gitano children, of the Roma children in Romania, you see. So in other countries, like in the UK, there is, what you have is the education of the children alongside each other, and then if there is a child or two or three children or a group of children in a class which needs additional resources, they get the additional resources inside the class alongside everybody else. You see, so for example, my daughter goes to a school where there are 30 children in a class, and there is one deaf child, and the other 29 children have learned sign language. You see what I mean? So, and the same, you know. So the notion is that you support the children in their mainstream schooling, and that seems to work better.
Just to throw another issue into the mix. Here in Central and Eastern Europe, there are many minority groups, ethnic and national groups, and they often want to have their own schools that are part of the national curriculum, but they want to teach in their own language or something, in their own cultural ways. Do you feel about that, or is this a separate issue to you?
Bueno, yo creo que los padres, cada padre tiene derecho a educar a sus hijos como y con quién quiere educarlos. Yo estoy de acuerdo, pero creo lo que yo creo es que todos tienen que tener el mismo nivel, sea de una forma o de otra.
I agree to the fact that every parent has the right to want to educate their children in their own way, but what I think it's important is that all the children have the same possibilities and opportunities to get the same level of education.
Porque si mi hija desde que empezó con 3 añitos al colegio, cuando quiera llegar a la universidad, si no tiene el mismo nivel educativo, ¿cómo va a llegar al mismo nivel que los demás?
Because if my daughter, when she started at 3 years old, to have a different education, how when she gets to university, how could she be able to compete with other kids to be able to enter university?
Porque se quejan de que nuestros hijos nunca, la mayoría, lo que hemos comentado hoy en la entrevista también, es que la mayoría de los niños gitanos nunca llegan a la universidad, la mayoría.
So what we have also already commented among us is that there's a problem. They blame us that our children don't get to university.
Pero está claro que no pueden llegar porque cuando quieren llegar, o sea, no van al mismo nivel porque ya desde pequeños se les ha enseñado algo diferente, inferior.
But it's obvious that they are not at the same level when they get to university because they have been learning a different curricula. They have started from behind.
Por eso, independientemente de lo que un padre quiera, siempre hay que educarle igual a mismo a un niño gitano, payo, chino, indio, negro, del color que sea. Es que eso da igual.
Because even if the parents want something different, to children you have to give them the same opportunities for education, even if it's black, immigrant, gitano or non-gitano, all have the same rights to education.
Porque imagínate si a los gitanos se le dará una educación, a los chinos se le dará educación, a los negros se le dará educación, a cada uno su educación. Entonces, ¿qué clase de educación a lo largo de nuestra vida, cómo sería?
Imagine you have different groups and you teach one thing to the Gitano children, you teach other children to the Chinese children, you teach a different thing to the black children. What will be the result of this? Which kind of education would you have?
Porque independientemente de cuando nuestros hijos sean mayores, que unos quieran seguir estudiando y otros no, pero hasta ahí todos tienen que saber lo mismo, todos tienen que ser iguales.
Because up to the point when our children become adults, they have to have this basic education. Then it will be their own decision where do they want to go. But up to that point, they have to have the same opportunities.
Pero de esta forma, si lo segregan de esta forma, nunca. O sea, es que yo veo claramente que si no, nunca nuestros hijos van a poder llegar nunca a un nivel como cualquier niño.
But if you segregate them already from so early, then they won't be able to have these opportunities to get further on in education.
So what next?
¿Qué es lo que sigue? ¿Qué propones?
Hombre, propongo que, por supuesto, en un futuro todo el mundo se dé cuenta de lo que están haciendo algo mal, está mal hecho, y quisiera que en un futuro todos nos apoyemos juntos todos, porque aquí habemos mucha gente que somos cada uno diferentes.
I propose that we all support each other. I ask you for your support, because we are all different, but we all must support each other.
Y que la gente nos apoye y llegue a lo más alto para que, por supuesto, se cambien estas ideas.
And with this support, I think it's possible to change these ideas.
Y que en un futuro todos tengamos la misma educación.
And in a future, we would be able to have the same education for all our children.
So how does the British system work again?
Well, what I have seen in Scotland, which is where I live with my children, is that what happens is you have a child who has additional needs of different kinds. It might be because the child has a disability, or it might be because the child is an immigrant child who has doesn't speak English, for example. And then that child will have alongside them, the child will be allocated a support worker who will be with them, if necessary, in the classroom. So, for example, doing translating or helping with the English or helping with movement or whatever it is. But the child stays in the classroom, in the mainstream classroom. Of course, then there are, say, schools for the deaf and things like that, but you do have the opportunity to have your child educated in the mainstream if you want to. In some schools, they have what they do is they have the main school and then they have a special needs unit, but it's always within the main school, within the same school. So you will have a normal school, and then perhaps you have a special needs. For example, in our local secondary school, is a big secondary school with 2,000 plus children, and then they have within that school they have a special needs unit for support for, say, children with autism or learning difficulties, who then perhaps spend part of the time in the special unit and part of the time in the main classrooms and so on. It's not a perfect system, and I know the parents complain, you know, it has a lot of problems. But I think at least in the primary schools it has the advantage that the children grow alongside each other. And my son goes to a tiny village school with about 35 children, of whom 15 roughly are Gypsy traveller children, Scottish travellers, and the other 15 are local village children, and they are all educated alongside each other, and the children who need additional support have additional support in the school for whatever reason, because their parents are illiterate, which is an issue, you see. So there is a support worker that works with the travelers, helping the parents read the letters and stuff like that.
So back to Spain, when you're talking about that there's immigrants in Gitano in a separate school, can I make the assumption that when you say immigrants, you're talking about asylum seekers, refugees, and others? Or are you talking about Germans? No. Germans and French are being segregated from...
No. Not, of course, not.
Well, then this
so it's working. What this is Spain has... Whereas, for example, immigration into the UK sort of took place in the 50s and 60s and so on, and continues now. Spain has had a massive flux of immigration in the last 15 years. From the ex-colonies of Spain, so North Africa, the Caribbean, Latin America, and the Philippines. So these are people who are looking for a better life in Europe. Yeah. So, and of course, there are poor people who leave the countries because of economic necessity. So it's not middle class Europeans or North Americans or anything like that.
The children of French and Germans and whatever, they're not being segregated.
No, of course not. So, and it's not that, I mean, of course, this is a situation which is specific in this area. I cannot really say whether everywhere in Madrid immigrant children are being segregated in the same way. But I know there are good studies, anthropological studies, of the different expectations of teachers of different kinds of children, immigrant children, and of different backgrounds in terms of class as well. So I know that definitely that's part of the story as well. But in this area, this is what happened. The immigrant children basically were channeled into the school for the Gitanos, what had been the Gitano school, you see what I mean? And the same happens with housing. The sort of government institutions that had been dealing with Gitanos, when immigrants started to arrive in big numbers, and they started to build shanty towns and so on, they were the ones who started to deal with immigrants. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So these problematic populations, in inverted commas, are dealt with by the same institutions in Spain. They are blocked together.
Thank you again, Liria de la Cruz and Paloma Gay Ublasco. And thank you again, Julieta, for making this interview possible. Let's listen to some music. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Valerie Novoselsky.
Por ser morena gitana.
Okay, Valery Novoselsky is he's a Roma man. He's from Ukraine. He's also spent part of his life in Siberia, Russia. He now lives in Israel, and he's also Christian and also with Jewish heritage as well. So he's a very interesting person because of all these different connections. And I've never met too many people in this world that have had so many connections all over the world. But he has a very fascinating topic. He runs this thing called the Roma Virtual Network. I'll put these links on the blog so you can find these things. And when I first came to Hungary and I was trying to figure out this Roma gypsy situation and I didn't know what was going on, basically, I found this guy's website and he has a number of mailing lists where information is distributed by country or by topic, etc. It was very helpful. So any kind of current English language news, he posts it about the Roma issue anywhere, everywhere in the world. Just a very valuable resource. So I had an interview with him in the Tibeti Tiazo in the 6th district on Yokai Utsa. And this is a Tibetan tea cafe or Tibetan cafe, or actually just tea. I think they might have some coffee, but and it was very delicious tea. And well, let's listen to Valery Novoselsky.
Yes.
So how old is Roma Virtual Network? You had your anniversary.
Well, last week, on the 19th of July, year 2012, Roma Virtual Network had its 13th anniversary, because it has started on 19th of July of year 1999.
And but why did you start this? Where did you live when you started this?
Well, while being originally from Ukraine, at the time when I started Roma Network, I was living in Israel, in the small town of Kiryat Shmona, 7 kilometers from Lebanese border. And historically, it's much more Lebanon than Palestine. It's not my fault or someone else's fault that British and French mandate authorities divided the land, I mean, of historical Lebanon into such pieces. Well, so I started the network in 19th July of year 1999, and I sent letters to European Roma Rights Center, to Romani Documentation Center in the University of Austin in Texas, well, also to Roma National Congress in Hamburg, to a number of organizations, and I was writing to them on behalf of Russian Roma who live in Israel. And it was in July, but then in September I did some network for Domari Gypsy community. These people live in Old Jerusalem, up to several thousand people.
What do you call them?
Domari people. Domari. Yes, this is another branch of Roma people. They don't call themselves Roma, they call themselves Dom people.
And they didn't immigrate from Europe? And they didn't.
No, they came to Arabic countries in 11th century, by the way, synchronously with Crusades, while not being Christians, just through migrations. It was 11th century, and they came from Persia, and they got dispersed in Syria, in Egypt, up to Maghreb.
Wow. And they call themselves Dom?
Dom people, and, yes, and, Dom. There are Dom people and there are Rom people.
I understand. So when you go to them as a Roma person yourself, you feel their culture in a similar way? I mean, what's...
No, it's not it's not exactly the same culture. I would say they are like relatives of a third degree, relatives, like cousins or even a bit less than that. But still, you can trace the difference between them and between Arabs, for example. Mm-hmm. If you visit them more often, and if you stay in their neighborhood, then you realize that these are not the same people. And you will realize that this is Roma people of the Middle East. You will know this, even so if not instantly. Little by little, during the interaction, you will understand.
So, kind of a... Maybe this is not connected, but I know that... The southern part of Israel that has the desert area, what do you call that?
Negev.
There are peoples there that cave dwellers is what I've heard it in English. Do you know about these people, cave dwellers?
No, I know about
they're not
only
Bedouin,
Bedouins.
Not Bedouin, but they these people. I just heard about these people recently. It was on the show recently, just that there's
cave dweller group, and they don't call themselves Bedouins, they don't call themselves Palestinians, and they don't call themselves Israelis. So I just...
It's possible, taking into account that since the time of Jesus Christ, there were sects of Essenes, those who were living in caves because, for religious reasons. So the existence of groups who do the same right now is not surprising at all. Mm. But whether they do it for religious reasons or just because of the customs of their ancestors, this is an open question. But I mean, I don't know about them, but I'm not surprised to hear. What I know is that the indigenous population of Negev Desert is this Bedouins, among whom you can find Domari, Dom people.
As well.
Yes.
You know, when I came to Hungary, it was almost, over 7 years ago now, I was trying to figure out the situation in Hungary with the Roma and the Hungarian Magyars and others. And so I was frantically searching on the internet trying to understand this. And it was your mailing lists and websites that is the best place I ever found for English news and to explain what's going on. And it seems like whatever country I want to find out about what's going on with Roma, you seem to be able to like organize these things so people can find information.
Yes, there is a need to make electronic archive, and there is a need to systematize the information. It's usually done by geographical principle, but right now I revive the tradition of structuring information according to the topics. I mean, usually it's done, but I sometimes put more emphasis on certain like categories. In the past it was geographical category, right now more on topical: employment, housing, education, health, for example. So yeah, there are different priorities in information sharing. There are different ways how you handle the dissemination of information, to whom you send it. It's very important, and I really like your comments that you like it. It means that Roma Virtual Network has a proper and relevant niche in the media world, and it helps as an electronic platform to locate information on Roma issues, non-biased information and more objective information, and it's reader friendly.
Mm-hmm. But you must have, as a Roma activist yourself, you've created a network of people that, I mean.
Yeah, it takes years. Roma media, you know, I'm Roma media activist, but it didn't happen within one day. It started on 19th of July of 1999, but before that I was a kind of grassroots activist. And then I started to switch to media activism because I saw that this niche needs to be taken by someone who will be able to share information properly. There was a Rom News Network, but this electronic platform was more tied to Roma National Congress and was not so much connected with the community in Budapest. Mm. So, but in my work, I tried to keep proper balance between different centers of power of Romani activism. I didn't stick to Hamburg or to Strasbourg. I just gave equal opportunities for all these centers, including Budapest, to share information, to reach their audience, to give them opportunity to express their views, and also to get information on events, on funding, on literature, you know. So I just keep the principle of balancing the interest of different parties, not being biased on for someone's sake. Mm-hmm. It took years to understand this and to develop proper concepts for handling of Roma network.
And so you're in Budapest now. I know you're here for a little while in the summer, but you're going to conferences and in the region as well. I mean, what have you found?
Sometimes I go to conferences. Sometimes I visit some of my colleagues personally. It depends. Mm. It depends. It's a creative process. And in June, after my arrival to Budapest, I was in Macedonia for several days for Roma Decade Steering Committee meeting. And it was an event when the chairmanship over Roma Decade was transferred from Macedonia to Croatia. So, and in months of July, I was more on personal tourist trips to Estergom, to St. Andre, to Pech. And then in the end of this week, I'm going to Transcarpathia to meet with people from Amari Cergeni organization. Amari Cergeni in Romani language, it means our star. and I'm going to meet with Roma from Transcarpathia. I will visit them. I don't know, maybe in August I'll do one more trip related to Roma issues, but I will tell you later to where exactly. Time in Budapest helps me to be more visible with my activity, but also to have better access to Roma events and to participate in the elaboration of different ideas. And it helps me also to express my ideas better, because it's not enough to have just online communication. It's better when people see you and you see people, and the elaboration of ideas is more productive in this way. So that's why I decided this year to come to Budapest, voluntarily, and my time here is just I support myself while being here. Even so, I'm strongly connected with Roma Decade Secretariat. Well, at the same time, I learn from them, I help them, and they help me. But I keep myself more as the editor of Roma Virtual Network than an intern of some respected organization. However, this communication internship helps, as it did 2 years ago with European Roma Rights Center. So, and when I go to Budapest, I have double work. First activity is a Roma Virtual Network, and the second one relates with the internship. So, it's for me, it's double work, and of course, I have more responsibilities, but it's a time worthy of such efforts. Even so, I'm more tired than I usually am. When I live in Israel, but still I have more, I achieve much more things than while being there in the Middle East, because Middle East is not so much a spot for Romani activism, maybe Domari activism, but not Romani activism.
In the different Roma cultures that you visit and wherever you go in the world, I mean, what is common in terms of the activism in these different cultures, and what are some examples of, I don't know, what is common amongst these different Roma cultures that you find?
Well, there are different kinds of Roma activists, as well as there are different kinds of Roma. There are some who stick more to cultural identity and preservation of cultural values. There are some more who want integration almost by the price of assimilation. There are some people who stick more to opportunities for young people, and some who are more stick to religious issues like Christian Philadelphia Church in Spain and other evangelical churches in Central Europe. So it depends, and we have diversity in Roma movement, in Roma communities. We cannot say that everyone is the same, you know. And diversity exists everywhere in any movement, and Roma are not the exception. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this diversity will show its positive characteristics, and, you know. But still, Roma have common, like, mutual challenges, and it relates to socio-economic challenges, like problems with employment, with housing, problems with documentation in the area of health. So there are many issues. There are some issues where we have to act jointly. So problems unite us more than our historical and cultural features, but still, Romani language for many Roma is a sign of identity. So it's many agree, many activists agree with that. Amekeren gudiso romani chipsi amari chip, I trouble to seklevav kadi chip, I tera kirav po amari chip, I see la chodrom, see cha chodrom. What I said is that many of us understand that Romani language is very important thing, and we have to keep it, to speak it, to learn it if we don't know. So it's a correct way to develop Romani language. But this is not the only one feature, and in such countries like Spain and Hungary, it's not too easy issue to deal with, because many Roma lost their language, not because of their fault even. Mm-hmm. So, but there are some issues which we work together, and it relates to culture, to economics, and politics also. But I'm glad that we discuss this. There are many open questions, and Romani civil society exists, and there are some likes, dislikes inside it. Life is going on.
Just a question about the Romani language. I mean, I have no ear for this sort of thing. So if I meet someone who can speak Romani in Poland, And if I meet Domari, if I meet someone in Spain, is it almost the same language?
If it's Domari, no, they will not understand. It's the same like ancient Slavic language in today's Russian. It's not the same. Domari have their own language. It's not dialect, it's just different language, which by roots relates to Sanskrit, therefore to Romanes, but it's not the same language. In Spain, if it's Spanish Roma, then usually or they don't know Romanes, or it sounds like Romanes mixed with Spanish language. So Polish Rom, average Polish Rom and average Spanish Rom will understand basic things from one another, but not fully. If it's Lovara who live in Spain for 200 years, then it's a different story. So it depends to which group particular Polish Rom and Spanish Rom belongs, because not all Spanish Rom are Calais, Gitanos. Right. There are some whose ancestor moved from Central Europe to Spain 200 years ago in beginning of 19th century. So they keep Romanes.
Because there's different kinds of Roma in
yes.
these different countries.
Yeah, and in Poland too, you can find Lavara, you can find Polska, Haladitka Roma, you can find Sinti because part of Poland used to be German. So it depends.
And plus the borders of these countries have changed a thousand
yes.
times over the years.
Yes, yeah. Of course. And there are also Romanian and Bulgarian Roma who live in Spain now and they have children. And who knows, maybe in 50 years their grandchildren will speak something else. Who knows? So you have to specify even when you say about the country.
So if I can say this question, so what is the point of learning Romani if you're a Roma?
Of your identity. It's not to forget your own roots and also Romani. The ones who know Romani language, they have access to a number of other languages, you know, to Persian, to Turkish, to Greek, to Romanian, you know. And also there are many families who use Romani language, you know. It's like, of course, India did not yet recognize Roma as a diaspora, it's a bit enigmatic and sophisticated. I mean, how Romani language would survive, but Roma people survive Holocaust and even other genocides too, including genocides committed against other nations whom they were part of, like Armenian genocide, where Armenian Roma were subjected to the same cruel treatment as Armenians, and deportation of ethnic Germans from Volga River, from Volga region, and Sintis was subjected to the same treatment as ethnic Germans. So despite that, Roma people survived all this and keep their culture, whenever it was possible to keep. And the culture includes also language, and it's important. Yeah, it's not an easy path, but slowly it will come, to the fact that the young generation of Roma will speak Romanes if we try. There are some families which put effort into speaking Romanes so that children would not lose it. I saw these families even in Israel exist, Russian Roma who speak Romanes, so that their Hebrew and Russian speaking children would keep, would know Romanes, would know, you know, so it's very important.
Well, any closing thoughts?
Well, what can I say? You know, during the last 20 years, if we are talking about Central Europe, former socialist countries, and we see that for one successful Rome, there are 20 Roma who are not so much successful. Roma activists want to change this phenomenon into all 20 Roma, 21 Roma to be successful. There is a sophisticated European bureaucracy which kills everyone and any good idea, any good initiative. They don't care who is Rom, who is Gajo. They just stop the whole progressive process of realization of ideas. The phenomenon of neo-Nazism, this Jobbik and, right-wing radicalism, it's a part of low flexibility of economic system, the system which does not like initiative people with entrepreneurial skills. People who can invest the best for their country are forced to move out from the country, and whenever there is economic problems, which relates with the stubborn political system, minorities are always accused. Even so, the problem reflects, affects the majority too. But minorities always accused, and there are eternal scapegoats for Europe, like Roma and Jews, and of course there will be someone who is black, like Turk or Arab or African, in addition to those two old minorities. But this would not save European society. I mean, constant blaming of the others. They should instead demand from the political system to change and to be better. Maybe not to be Eurosceptics, but to be anti-bureaucratic. And also to make, the Eurofunding can be good. It's not only for Roma, for non-Roma too, but they should just change this sophisticated system of funding when non-governmental organizations got bankrupt because of this Eurofunding complexities. So I can guess that it's not only about Roma people, it's also about the others. When this European funding with a lot of potential money just does not give good results in general. It can look good on paper with few successful outcomes on the margins, but in reality it does not. So people should fight with bureaucracy, not to blame the people who are by birth maybe different than them. It's not the color of your skin, not the form of your nose, not the religion that creates problem for you, for Europe now, especially for Central Europe. No, the problem is in social political systems that didn't change radically during 20 years, which still is slow as a torture. Yeah, so it's better for Europeans to pay attention on this, on changing, on transformation of system, not on striking the minorities. Otherwise, it will be the same disaster like with Nazism in Europe in 1940s. So better just to change the way of thinking and think big about the societies which will accept everyone and which will allow the diversity. So I think that majority of Europeans in the depths of their soul want to have peaceful, normal life, and they don't want someone's death, destruction, sufferings. So I wish and I hope and I pray that this best part of European soul will reflect itself in the years to come.
That was Valerie Novoselsky. Thank you again for being on the radio show. And let's listen to some music, and when we come back, we'll listen to an interview with Balázs Touré, a Hungarian photographer. Next is Balázs Touré. He's a Hungarian photographer, and he's since the murders, the serial murders that happened starting in 2008, I believe. He's been connecting with the families of the victims, and he's done a series of portraits of the families. And I'll put the link on the website, lmv.hu/mindenkijoga, MINDENKIJOGA. And these are fantastic photos. You can really kind of see the pain in these people's eyes and what they've gone through. And he's going to describe the serial murders and what's happened and what's happened to them since. In many ways, their situation has been forgotten. Sadly, and the situation that led to these serial murders really hasn't been resolved, and the people that were arrested, four people that were arrested for these serial murders, they are in the courts now, and he'll explain like some of what's been going on with that. Well, and last March 2012, he did have an exhibition of this series of photos called In Cold Blood, The Aftermath of a Hate Crime against Roma in Hungary. It was at the Fuga, F-U-G-A, Fuga Budapest Center of Architecture. He was born in 1973. He was a student at the Mohai Nagy University of Art and Design in Budapest, as well as in the School of International Center of Photography in New York City. Let's just start the conversation with Balázs Touré.
Hello, Balázs Touré. Thank you for coming to the Mindenki Yoga radio show. Tell me about yourself. What's going on in August 2nd, 2012? It's the International Roma Holocaust Commemoration Day. I'm not sure if that's the official title, but that's the idea.
I have no idea about the Roma, official title either, but I know some of the people who will be invited. Actually, they are the victims of the attacks that took place in between 2008 and 2009, and it will be a very, very interesting and special day for them, because that is one of the days when these issues are mentioned here in Hungary, and they are looking forward that day. With a little suspicion and with a little bit of fears, because they just don't know how to deal with what happened to them, and they don't know how to deal with the aftermath. So any day, especially this day, is very important and brings up many, many questions in each family. So it's a very special day.
Briefly, can you explain the years that this happened and basically the facts of the case?
So between the summer of 2008 and actually the summer of 2009, finishing or ending on August 3rd, 2009, six people were murdered and many more were wounded. And many other buildings were shot at with shotguns and with different weapons and Molotov cocktails were thrown at certain buildings. One building just burned down completely. So it's quite horrible in its scope. And the activity behind this seems just the tip of the iceberg, because if you just look at the new report of the Athena Institute, you will find a great deal of very disturbing things about the Magyar Nemzeti Arcvonal that has been organizing and running camps for many, many years and dealing with the with helping and teaching far right wing groups for paramilitary actions and activity. And that's very, very frightening, because it seems that this thing ended in 2009, and that series of killings really ended then.
They caught four people.
The trial started a little more than a year ago, in March 2011. And that's an important moment, not only because of this process, but because of other things. But that trial is still going on. There's now the second summer break. They will continue to look at this case in September, and it will.
Why is this? Why is the, I mean. I think in every country it's different at how long trials take, but it seems like a very long time.
It's a very long time.
Is that long time for Hungary, or is it just...
I'm not sure. I think it's such a big thing, such a really complicated thing, that the judge wants to see all the details and want to look at and want to discuss all the details. It's actually very painful. So when the victims attended at the trial, that was like, you know, minute by minute and centimeter by centimeter and loss after loss was discussed, and they really suffered a lot. So it didn't take too long for them, but it was very painful. And the judge is really very doing a very nice job. Like every detail is discussed, and I think it's a very, very fine thing. You understand a lot of the nature of these people and how they started to plan these attacks and how they figured out to get guns and how they just live their everyday life. And you just really have a bizarre image, a bizarre picture of these guys and their employees and the community they belong to and the city they belong to, which of course not a city that they want to see. They are from Debrecen, so Debrecen is not their city in this way. It's not a bad city, of course, but how they just live in a community in a wider sense, that nobody just really thinks that they will do something at one day. This kind of hate speech is just embedded in our daily life, and how we just don't think that anything will happen after all. When the employee had a big concern about one of the swastika tattoos on one of the guys who was at the door of her music pub, that it's not really good because some people might be offended by that. And then they won't come to the pub, which was a very good music pub, very, very nice gypsy musicians, actually, very fine jazz musicians, and you don't have a problem because of the swastika, because it's a problem in itself, but because, you know, it might offend some people who will not come in and pay for the ticket and have a beer, and that's a very strict business approach about something that is not about business, something about anything else than business. So this whole trial is going on, and you could hear this woman who employed them and just going back to this March 2011, which I mentioned, is that at that time it became public that all these people they have no actually income, they own nothing, so they just cannot compensate the victims. First, according to Hungarian law, they should compensate the Hungarian state, which spent around 100 million forints on this manhunt and all the other costs that came up like above 100 million forints. So they should pay for this first, which is quite strange. And then if they have 100 million forints, then they may compensate the victims, their own victims. So they are not the first to be compensated, but just after that, the state can get all their belongings, sell them or whatever they just do, and then these people just get something, the remaining chunk. So it's quite embarrassing. So what we know since March 2000 or April 2011, that these four people, were they convicted, they won't be able to compensate the victims. So there's the question why those people who were, whose families were attacked and still alive and still struggle to find a job and still struggle to come to live a proper life or live a proper life comparing to what they had before. So why are they not compensated? So why they have to struggle? Why they have to live in the condition they live?
Just in terms of the defense of the people who are alleged to have committed these murders, is there any insanity plea, or is this, what is their, just simply not guilty, or what's their defense?
They never admitted killing anyone.
Okay.
So we know that they will never admit doing anything wrong, except shooting at buildings, which is quite bizarre, because if you shoot at a building and you are not sure whether there's someone inside or not, then it's an attempt for a homicide. It's not something like, oh, I just shoot at a building and at the end there was nobody, so what's wrong with that? It's like shooting at a teen or you know, whatever. It's not a big thing. I can legally own a gun. I just try to practice. No, it's a different thing. They always come up with this.
Do they have these guns legally?
No. They.
So where did they get the guns? Is this
they attacked the home of a hunter, and they took all his guns and the ammunition. And then it's quite bizarre because it didn't turn out how it happened. At the trial, you could see photographs from the police and from the National Bureau of Investigation, and there were like ammunition rounds belonging to machine guns or submachine guns, which is quite odd because they never used them. So they were very different ammunitions than what we saw actually in action. But they had them in the small garden, which belonged quite bizarrely belonged to their boss, actually, who owned this or who ran this music pub in Debrecen, and employed them as, say, guards and people around who need one of them who studied at the Zen Academia is a professional musician, so he did the all the audio stuff during concerts. So they were like proper, actually not just proper employees, but this guy was the lover actually of this lady who ran this music pub in Debrecen. So it's a very bizarre story. And the most bizarre in this, when he was when she was asked by NNE right after these four guys were caught by some 70 member commando, that she was questioned for 3 days, and at the end of the third day she said that she withdraws all what she said, because she was told that she can be a protected witness, and but they cannot guarantee her safety, because it happened before that someone was killed, even the person was protected by the police. So she said that, then just forget what I said in the past 3 days. I go home with my son, and you know, that's all. That's all what I want to say. She was very much afraid. She said at the trial that I told everything about the boys. She called these people boys. She said that I told everything to the cops, and I was very much afraid. This whole story started to become one big picture in front of me, and I wanted to tell everything. So she may have told more than what happened, more than what was just the most important fact. She talked about actually abuse by his by her lover. Later she said it never happened. So it was a very, very big mistake actually by the police, by NNE, that they just couldn't convince her to be a protected witness. She said that she refused to take part in this program after she was told that someone was once killed during this during the trial. So she said, okay, I don't have anything else to say.
So members of these families that were attacked, or members of the families were killed, they're going to be at Nehru Park in
perhaps Nehru Park, or perhaps in a local church in the 8th district. Mm-hmm. They were invited there last year, I'm a little concerned after 3 years that actually an invitation is a very nice thing, very important thing. Perhaps many of the families expect that, but I think so. I think that they expect a little more than that. It's not just an invitation. It's not just words on a few days of this year, but something that and it's not about compensation, like not about money. It's about they feeling that they are considered as victims. And that's a real tragedy. The state couldn't protect them, and
I think I think the problem is, maybe, I don't know, maybe you agree, I don't know, is that obviously there is certain people who did those horrible crimes, but there is a larger picture of what's going on in Hungary, and it still continues today. I mean, this summer we've had crazy attacks on statues and people's homes with swastikas and these X's over people's homes, and that was in the west part of the country, I think. And when I saw that, when I saw the pictures of the X's painted over the homes of Roma, I was thinking, this is ex-Yugoslavia. They did the same thing, you know, where they put the X's over the crosses over people's homes and they marked them for death. I mean, it was, I was really scared at that moment. But you know, I didn't see a whole lot of outrage. It was just like the daily outrage rather than people really like kind of acting against it.
It's quite hard to comment on this because I mean, I agree. There's like a good number of posts on Facebook and sharing these photos and sharing some part of the fear. But from this fancy Budapest apartment, I think we should do more. One thing is that you visit these places, and one thing you try to figure out how to try to protect people. I guess it's not my role to play a policeman or to be a bodyguard, but to create organizations or create networks that take care of people, or just you can, you know, just go there and ask, so how you feel after this, and what you may expect, and what you may, witness or encounter. I think it's the role of the social workers there. It's role of the city council there. But since nothing like this happened before, nothing really will happen. I don't think that the mayor will send out a number of people just to meet these families and tell them that they trying to figure out something to protect them, or to just let them, know that if they would like to move to another place or to another city for like a couple of days, they will try to help them to do so. This is the same thing that happened after these killings, that practically nobody asked about the families about what they would like to do, how they would like to continue their life, what they find important, whether they would like to stay in the same building when someone was just killed, or were they about to move somewhere else, or they would like to go to a temporary place and then figure out later on when they just can't think about what happened actually to them. And it's still the same. Nobody really, doing something that they actually need to ask. Can I help you in some way, or what would be that? What would you like to hear? Or
well, there seems to be two levels of it. I mean, I was very happy last summer with Tartu St. George and Hayu Salanta, and people went there and stood in front of the homes of people that were under threat. And I've never seen, before that time, this kind of direct solidarity of Hungarians defending Hungarians, where usually protests are very symbolic things and everybody goes home and that's it. But this is real. This wasn't so symbolic. And I was amazed by that. What has happened since then? Well, I mean, we haven't had the similar circumstance in the exact way, but still, I don't see the organization overall preparing for the next Tartu St. George or whatever,
I'm afraid that there's only a bunch of people really interested in this, and only a fraction of them has money for this, or the courage to do this, or time to do this, and then, these seems to be like excuses, but in many cases they are unfortunately facts. And against this, or next to this, you can just see a very well organized far right wing movement with a number of really frightening groups, and it's quite hard to deal with that. It's quite hard to counter this, and. And you know, in one way, you cannot be, for example, just mentioning my role, you cannot be actually a family member in one place, and on the next day when you go home, you cannot be, a fighter who just counters these far right wing groups, because that really makes a very bad situation for those family that you belong to or you know or whatever. So it's two different things, and I guess people just have no idea what to do, and it's just a matter of people who lived in places like this. It's a matter of learning the techniques of how to deal with that, of how to communicate, with only those who you would like to communicate and not being bugged or whatever. And that's not just a matter of like, I would like to figure out that and I would like to do it on my own. It's about more people doing this and more people like organizing and making decisions as who is going to say investigate the camp of Magyar Nemzeti Arcvonal, which posted a video on YouTube like 3 years after this or 2 years after this what we are talking about now, that they attack or they ambush a bunch of American soldiers, they kill them and they just celebrate it. Which is, I don't think it's very funny in a NATO country that you have organizations who just celebrate the death of your allies. So it's something very bizarre. I think it's far enough just to get people in a prison. And because it's far more than just a funny video. And it's quite frightening that these people have videos on YouTube showing them how to occupy a building with guns and how to deal with for example with any kind of resistance there, and I don't think it's normal. that you need to do this, and you just post it on YouTube. Because if you just don't do that, I think that I can assume that there are people like this, but that's a different thing that anyone can know. That if you go around and you check all these people, you can figure out who is who. It's not a long thing, and it's not a difficult thing. It's not a very complicated thing.
It's. I mean, Facebook is an adventure. You know, I mean, if you go to the Yobik Facebook pages and then you click on people, and most of these people do not lock down the privacy settings on Facebook whatsoever, and you look at what they like and you look at the pictures they post. I mean, you know, it's pure Nazi stuff. I mean, that's what it is. And you know, and a lot of people want to like try to make it into like, oh, it's just ultra nationalist. No, this is like serious crazy stuff here. And
so at least half of them could be convicted alongside with these four people. And since what is a real big critics about this trial, that since it started, They are the four people who are there, and where are all the others? Where are all the friends? Where are all these guys who just started to describe that they just go to parties and they listen to national rock? And okay, what is national rock? What's that? And he started to come up with things like it's a little bit about being proud to be Hungarian. It's a little bit about the Jews. It's a little bit about the gypsies. And then the judge set him to stop. Because he's playing, or he needs to deal and work by what was given to him by the attorney, and if that doesn't really look at the background, only the sole action of those four people, the judge has no right to go after certain people. It's a very tricky thing. It's many lawyers said that this the fundament of this trial is totally bad, because it only look at those four people and the sole actions of those four people. And no context, and no background, and no links, and no people behind them, nothing else than that. And if you just come to this thing, you really wonder who benefited from this. Who earns a lot of money being MPs in a parliament, whereas they say that there's a gypsy criminality, blah, blah, blah. It's a very, very tricky thing. So, you know, I just don't say that someone ordered this, but it was like they, you know, nobody needed to order this. There was like 10 years of hate speech, 10 years of talking about something that, you know, there are people who are strange-hearted, people who are like whatever, communists, Jews, whoever, who are not like us. And it's, you know, it's not, it started to work in June 2008. Some people thought that they will go and you know, put justice or get justice in their hand, which meant that they shot at buildings in Galgagyörg. And they were not very, very satisfied with that, because they were just, you know, there was not a serious media coverage. That was their problem. So they went, can't recall the name of this village, but they shot at buildings because they didn't really examine their maps carefully. So they shot at buildings, and then it turned out that those all belonged to Hungarian people, not to Roma. So they were like again quite disappointed, and the reason they shot at those buildings because they were so poor. Just they were, you know, those just poor. So they mixed up Roma with Hungarians because they were poor, almost died. But they didn't meant to kill poor Hungarians, only the Roma. So they started to carefully plan the attacks and to pick those people. And there's this confusion that whether they really were picked on based on their role or in the community or on their personality, because all of them were loved by the people around them. So if it would stand, then it's far more frightening that you are just killed because you are an important and a beloved person in your own community. It's not just that your building or your home is on the edge and on the far edge of the gypsy area of the village, and that's the easiest part to go and shot at some and shoot at someone. It means that you figure out who that person is and you try to kill exactly that person or that family. So it's,
and this is illustrated in the new Hungarian film Csak a Szél, Just mm-hmm. the Wind, where the people targeted, you know, the film is a fictionalized but mm-hmm. true film, but the people targeted are the ones that are working, the ones that are trying to get through school, contrary to the stereotype of Hungarian Roma, and they were targeted, and this is very much in some of the targets that happen. You're a photographer. What do you take pictures of? What do you do?
Well, In this story, I'm not necessarily a photographer. I still consider myself as a photographer. But long before this, I made cityscapes, buildings and structures and things like that. And I was always asked, so why don't you take photos of people? So, and my answer was that, you know, that will come one day, and I don't know what to do, and I just don't take pictures of people simply because they are interesting, or they have certain gestures, or you know, I really will need to find the reason why I connect with them, and not just because they are interesting in one way or the other. It's a kind of like disrespect. That I don't know them, but I find them interesting on a very superficial level, and then I just say that, okay, can I take a photo of you because you are so interesting? So I said that, you know, at one point I will do that. At one point I will do that. But that was, you know, more than 10 years ago when I said that I have no idea how to start taking photos of people. And then later on, I started to make stories mostly about my kind of like images that suggest stories, and when this thing happened, I lived in the US and I studied at the International Center of Photography, and I was told by one of my lecturers that, you know, this is an important thing, and then, you know, you should try to do this or deal with this. And his workshop, it was Joe Rodriguez, and his workshop was titled Getting Closer, and I took the workshop because I was like a little bit afraid of how to deal with people. And then he said that, you know, you shouldn't be afraid of these people, and you shouldn't be afraid of you know, I myself couldn't take photos of people. I was a taxi driver like 30 years ago, and I went to ICP, and I was given a homework that when you take someone from A to B, just don't make photos through the windscreen, but try to take a photo of the people behind you. And I was like, it's no way I can do that. It's so much embarrassing. I can't ask them. I just can't do that. And he said, you know, if you want to deal with people, if you want to tell stories, you have to learn that. And he said, you know, step by step I learned them. So he later on he photographed gangs in LA, very very tough people, very very strange situations. And he said that, you know, I want to talk about the situation, I want to know them, I want to, you know, discuss how they live, and I'd like to talk about the situation they are in. So I have to be able to come up and with my questions and just, you know, be honest with them and figure out how I just approach them.
So what have you been doing in Hungary?
And after this, almost after exactly after these the guy who were later charged with the killing of these innocent people, I visited the family at Tatárszentgyörgy, and started to discuss what happened to them and slowly started to take photos, portraits, landscapes, just small objects that were still laying around the building, the small house that was just burned completely down, and it was very very strange. There was like a shoe just in the sand, like a few meters away from the entrance of this building, and it was like really really the images of Yugoslavia 20 years ago, and it was really horrible to see that this can happen here, and we are not going ahead and getting this kind of past they had. We're not learning anything from that if this can happen and a 5-year-old boy can be shot in the face, you just come to a point that you don't understand the country where you live, because I assume that this is a little different than that country was 20 years ago, and I'm not sure it is any different. I'm not sure it's any better than that, and I'm very much concerned about the future of this country, because we may go into that direction. And many people like to play with the fire, and it's not funny, and I don't want to take photos like this anymore, but you know, if it's necessary, I will visit any other family who would like to tell what happened to them, but I do hope that there will be no other family attacked, and I do hope that there will be no one shot at, and it will be, you know, there will be some kind of miracle that will bar these people from doing this, because it was a very sad thing after all that none of the families were compensated, and not much help they were given by society or by the city councils or by the state, and that's shocking, because you know you don't have an excuse for this. So you know, if your family member is just shot at and he or she dies, and then you just say that, you know, I'm sorry, or maybe you don't say more than that, that there's a state that needs to protect people. And it's something like, you know, they, as if they were not belong to this society or to this state, and they were like outside of this, of this realm, so they don't deserve the same protection and they don't deserve the same respect. And it's very, very sad. Because they know this, they are not, you know, they're not stupid. They just understand this, that day by day they have to live the same life. When they are perhaps unable to work, they are perhaps unable to go on. They need to take pills, and you still have nightmares, and you still see that thing what happened to you. Simply because you don't mention it every day, and you don't discuss it with all the family members every day. They said that, you know, we every day think about them, and it can't go away just like that.
Thank you very much, Balaj. Let's do another conversation in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Balaj Touré, thank you again for being on the show, and we'll have more information. We'll have more from him in the future, I hope. Thank you again for listening to the Mindenki Yoga Radio Show. You can always find us online at lmv.hu/mindenkiyoga, and you can also send us email at mindenkiyoga@mailbox.hu, and you can also find us on Facebook. Just type in Mindenki Yoga. And thank you again for listening, and talk to you again next week.